Earth is closed today. We will be talking in detail about the series Loki and the Marvel Cinematic Universe in general. Come back and have a listen when you're all caught up. Welcome to the Time Variance Authority. I am not Miss Minutes. I'm Alyssa, and it's my job to keep this podcast running smoothly so it doesn't cause a Nexus event. On today's episode, we will be diving into the multiverse and all the madness to come. With me are three TVA agents on the prowl to prune those who just go against our authority. We can't have that. First up, we got the dame with a desk full of Infinity Stones. Joe! For those who are not watching on Twitch, she went, shh.
Don't tell people my secrets.
We have the maiden of mischief herself, Megan!
Well, howdy!
And our ever-enchanting guest, Alex!
Oh, I liked that. Hi.
Ooh, hi.
That was how good. I like that.
You know, sometimes I break out my Miss Minutes cosplay. It's not really that I can dress as a clock. I just talk like I really want some sweet tea. That's how it goes.
No, I've never been called enchanting before. I think I can get used to that.
Ooh, so enchanting. So enchanting. Ladies, this is going to be an awesome, awesome conversation we're going to have. Loki has been one of my favorite things to come from Marvel in a very long time. So I would love to hear, what did we think of the story and how did it deepen our relationship with his character? Was it a good anthology for Loki?
I think it was really interesting. I don't know if I feel exactly the same as you, Alyssa.
That's okay.
I did really like it. It was not at all, I don't know if I was expecting anything in particular, but it wasn't at all what I expected. It felt so different than anything I've seen come out of Marvel, which is consistent with their Disney Plus outputs recently. The Disney Plus content that we've been receiving has been very open and different and stylistic from Marvel, which I think is really cool. So I'm excited to see more and to learn more about Loki, because he very much deserves his own content.
I think so too. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I feel like answering this question is so hard for me. Alyssa has been listening to me go back and forth on like, this is the greatest show ever, to like, oh, they did so many things wrong and it sucks. Like, it's just been a roller coaster of emotions. And I think when I take a step back, that's what I should have expected from a show called Loki. So I'm going to go with, it probably met most of my expectations. We did get a lot of information about him, and I feel like we do know him better now than when we started, which I think is just the goal in general when people get their own kind of spinoff show.
Totally. Alex?
I think I have a very unpopular opinion. I found it boring.
Boring?
To me, the show felt necessary to tell the story, and I get that it's setting up for phase four and whatnot, but it kind of felt like a chore. Like, I know I have to watch this so that I can get through it. I think I went in with really high expectations after WandaVision, and that's kind of where I think my problem was I basically had these crazy expectations that it was going to be an amazing show, like just like WandaVision. But by like the third episode, I was like, ugh. Like, I wasn't as excited to watch it.
Really?
I knew I had to, because it sets up the story. But I feel like that's all it was to me. It's setting up the overall phase four, and you have to watch it.
I think
were there funny moments? Yes, but
I don't know how to feel in my heart about that.
I'm so sorry.
No, I mean, like, out of the four of us, we are a like Jackson Pollock of opinions of this show, so that's totally fine. I think that, like Joe, I was kind of like very excited about it, but also kind of disappointed by it, just in terms of like exploring Loki as a character for who he is in the comics. Like, Loki is obviously a survivor, and Loki is mischievous because he's the god of mischief, but he's also like genuinely gender fluid, and he like presents as a girl and he presents as a boy. And some of the things that they should have touched on, they didn't touch on. The ways that they approached some of the ways that he presents or is as a person was a little strange, because I guess we'll get into that a little bit later about Sylvie and how she was introduced and what her purpose was. I did really enjoy it because I think it was essential for the MCU as a whole in their plot line. I like a chore that involves me sitting on the couch and watching TV every Wednesday at 8 o'clock in the morning. One, gets me out of bed. And two, it had magic and stuff in it, which is my favorite thing.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going to be watching something to learn more about what's to come, awesome. I liked it a lot more than Falcon and the Winter Soldier, for sure. But we'll talk about that later. What is a quote from the series that you really enjoyed or hit you a little bit different?
I have three, if we don't mind. I'll just say them because I love them so much. One of the things I will touch on later, I won't like go deep into now, is that I'm not a massive fan of the writing of the show.
Okay.
But these quotes obviously say differently because I really like them. But as an overall, it's not my favorite. So I really love, in the very first episode, it's kind of like an Easter egg because it hits on something that happens in Endgame, where Ant-Man asks Tony what that smell is when he's like in his sweater when they're in New York. And he goes, it's Axe body spray. And he's like, dude, it's intense. Like, you can smell it so much. And in Loki's trial, when he gets through all everything in the TVA, he goes, but what about the Avengers? They time traveled, and they hint on something like, how do you know that you were in your current timeline? And he says, oh, believe me, you can smell the cologne of two Tony Starks. So I thought that was really funny. And then I really love episode two. Mobius says, if you think too hard about where any of us came from, who we truly are, sounds kind of ridiculous. I think that's just like a really cool concept to try and wrap your head around, and then just be like, yeah, that's super weird. And Owen Wilson's delivery of that is amazing. And then the final one, I think, is like a huge popular quote that everybody has been quoting recently because it's from the last episode, when Sylvie says, why aren't we seeing this in the same way? And Loki says, because you can't trust and I can't be trusted.
Epic. That was a great one. I really like that one. Alex, what about you?
I mean, I don't disagree with Megan. Like, the writing also wasn't my absolute favorite. Really, there was just one quote that stuck out that wasn't kind of a cliche. And it was more like, you didn't really realize the significance until later on in the series. But it's when he says, do a lot of people not know that they're robots? And at the time, you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of funny. And then you keep watching the show and the big spoiler of who the TVA really is. And you're like, oh, and then all of a sudden you click it. So that was a very exciting moment for me that I really enjoyed.
The frequency.
Yeah.
The frequency that they were on. They would have caught them like that.
Right? So I actually really enjoy it. It's kind of like the little foreshadowing moments that they do that kind of really got my attention. I absolutely loved that.
That's awesome. What about you, Joe?
I only wrote down one thing, and I just thought it was a pretty good quote that summarizes us being able to follow all of these different stories. I wrote, no one bad is ever truly bad, and no one good is ever truly good.
You're a bad guy doesn't mean you're a bad guy.
Honestly, that's what it is, because everybody is the villain in somebody's story and everybody's the hero in somebody else's, right? So nobody is ever truly, like, no individual act is ever good or bad. It's just kind of like your perspective or your perception on what it did to benefit or to hurt you in what way, right? Like, I just thought that was such an interesting quote. And I love that it came from Mobius also. I kind of expect something like that to come from, like, Loki or something like that. But I think Mobius had a lot of really good one-liners or really good pieces of wisdom.
Yeah. Mobius was awesome. I really liked hearing it from Lightning McQueen's voice. It was awesome.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I was not expecting that type of character depth. Full disclosure, when it was announced that Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Gosh, I always get
mixed up. Luke is in the Legally Blonde universe. He's somewhere with
It's such an easy mistake to make, though, you know? When I found that out, I was kind of just not really expecting much from that character. I figured it would just sort of be like a wow type of character and, you know, no depth whatsoever. So I was pleasantly surprised by just the writing around him.
Mm-hmm. I think this also really highlighted how good of an actor Owen Wilson actually is. 100%. He's done so many comedies in his career that a lot of people just don't really take him seriously. So to see him in a Marvel movie, again, all of us were very like, oh God, how's this going to go? And he did such a good job. If not, he might be my favorite character of the whole show.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For real. Mobius M. Mobius. Is his middle name Mobius also? Mobius.
Oh my
Mobius,
God,
Mobius.
I hope so.
Triple M. I love
it. Or it could be M. E. M.
Ooh.
Like Homer J. Simpson, but it's like J, yeah.
Oh my God. You're a dork. My favorite quote, I think I called dibs on it. I wrote it in there and I was like, nobody else take it. My favorite is, love is like a dagger. It's a weapon to be wielded far away or up close. You can see yourself in it. It's beautiful until it makes you bleed. But ultimately, when you reach for it, it isn't real. And I think that was a very interesting parallel for Loki to say it and then for them to kind of like show a visualization of that in the last scene where they're having their like dagger fight and they're using their magic wizard powers. And I thought that it was very on the nose that Loki really like he let his guard down and kind of decided that he was going to trust in Sylvie. And because she like one wise person, Joe told me, Sylvie is still kind of like a kid. Still, she was a kid when she got pruned and she never really grew up. So she doesn't have that maturity to trust. And he's seeing this dagger that he loves her, hopefully in a weird familial way, not in a romance kind of way. it kind of stabbed him and made him bleed. So it's an interesting way to foreshadow.
Are we going to talk about that huge elephant in the room, or are we just going to...
Oh, that they're the same person?
So, oh, no.
What's the elephant?
The kiss.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they kissed each other, and it's like themselves. I saw it when it happened, and I went, no! I literally just screamed into the ether. I was like, fuck no, man.
Okay, but you can't tell me you were surprised.
I wasn't surprised, but I was like, I was really hoping that Marvel would be like, yeah, they love each other in a like a family way. And they're like, this person is a personification of myself. And like, I have to learn to love myself kind of thing. And that's why I'm unsure if Sylvie kissed him to distract him or kissed him because they like each other. I don't know if that's the way that it's kind of going. And also from what I said earlier, how weird of Marvel to be like, this is our only canon, like gender fluid, definitely bisexual, confirmed by 4 freaking words in this whole series. Let's make him fall in love with himself as a woman. No.
I think a lot of it is, if you're trying to find the like silver lining in that whole situation, is that he I think he did learn to love himself in a sense. I know it sucks that that's how they portrayed it, but he grew so much as a character from episode 1 to episode 6, where he could give 2 craps about having a throne. He just wanted somebody he cared about to be okay.
Exactly.
And I think it could have been taken in any way. It's unfortunate that they decided to do that kiss because it didn't need it.
Yeah.
It was bad. As somebody who was looking at it from an acting perspective, and initially I didn't read any of that at all. I saw her grab him for a kiss. It was a horrible kiss. And then she just pushed him through the thing. It was such a bad kiss.
I was uncomfortable.
If you're going to do a really horrible kiss, at least make it good. Like if it's
going to be a kiss of,
yeah, if it's going to be a kiss between two characters that nobody wanted to have them kiss, at least make it a good kiss. And it was just like two lips sort of being pressed together and not doing anything. And it was really awful.
Can I use a sound from the soundboard since we're already here?
Go for it.
This is a sad trombone.
Well, so I might have missed this part, and I don't know if you guys can fill me in. Who kissed who?
Sylvie kissed Loki.
Yeah, Sylvie kissed Loki.
Because it makes me wonder, maybe it was so awkward because Loki actually doesn't love her in that way. And maybe he does love her as a family. And to him, that was, he wasn't ready for. I'm hoping that's what it was. Don't take this away from me.
I'm just going to, only because I watched it like 8 times before we did this, because it was something I really wanted to talk about and understand. Fair. So I think that, like Alyssa said, it was, she was distracting him so that she could get rid of him and fulfill her glorious purpose.
Yeah.
And it was awkward from her perspective because she didn't actually want to kiss him. She just did it because she thought she had to get rid of him. He accepted it, but was obviously confused and didn't know where it's coming from. But when they do the turn, you can see his body movements pull her in a little bit. But it was all very choreographed, which I will get into later. But yeah, I do understand the purpose of it now, having watched it 8 times. But I think it is the whole series needs to be seen more than once. If you just watch all the episodes once, maybe it doesn't hit people the right way.
Yeah,
that's just my opinion, though. Yeah,
very fair. I was hoping that she wasn't going to turn out to actually be a Loki, to be honest. That was my, I was hoping that she was actually going to be Enchantress. Now, I am aware that they took the Sylvie character's inspiration from Enchantress. I was just hoping they were fully going to be like, no, it's Enchantress. This isn't even Loki. Like, you know, then I would actually be willing to believe a romance a little bit more, or I'd at least be a little bit okay with it.
But you know what, Alex, there's still time. Like, they've mixed and merged so many characters in this show, even like,
yeah, you're absolutely
was,
right.
Like, predicting the big bad was going to be Kang the Conqueror, and they were sort of right, but not really. Like, there's bits and pieces that Marvel is taking, I guess, in this new phase. They're being really creative and using that creative liberty to, like, mix and match people as they see fit and make them into their own kind of unique characters from a film perspective. So she kind
of
is.
To hold
like,
hope.
She, and... Yeah, like, she... Her thing, well, I was gonna say her thing is enchantment. Her name is Sylvie and Loki, so both.
And
go, Megan, go.
She also, sorry, I have to get this off my chest.
It's fine. Go.
Also, does the whole kiss, or he confesses all of those feelings to her and says, like, I know how you're feeling, I've been in this position, I just want you to be okay. She kisses him and says, but I'm not you, and pushes him through the wall.
You're absolutely right.
That was a hot take. I didn't even put those together. I like that. That makes me feel a lot more comfy because I was feeling really uncomfy for a little bit.
But so, you know what? Like, it's not. So interesting, though, because the whole time she keeps going like enchant Eliath with me. And he's like, I can't. And she's like, you and me are the same.
Yeah.
So you are me. So you can do it. And she goes back and forth and is very flip floppy about whether they're the same or they're not the same. And I feel like that's also an indication of maybe the writing not being.
Maybe
totally
he's her stepbrother.
But like, what kind of M. Night Shyamalan twist would that be if you fall in love with the person that enchanted you? Like, that's some like Stockholm kind of stuff going on there. But I'm just saying, like, they fall in love and all of a sudden she learns the truth and there's a whole other conflict there. Forget about the multiverse. Forget about the fact that there's branching and you need Doctor Strange to come in and fix everything. We got this love triangle we got to deal with.
Poor Doctor Strange. Burp. He's just the janitor of the MCU right now. He's just mopping everything up.
Seriously.
For why?
I feel for this guy. He's going to come in and be like, guys, I was gone for a couple of movies and maybe some shows. What the freaking heck?
I want to see more than anything a Doctor Strange show just about the multiverse. Give me Sherlock, but give me Doctor Strange.
Doctor Sherlock.
I love it. I would watch the crap out of that show. Because Doctor Strange is so interesting because he can do every kind of genre of MCU. He can do a more grounded story. He can go to space. He can do magic. He can go in the multiverse.
He can do magic.
He could do magic. So, I mean, I think that would be that's a missed opportunity if you don't do it. I mean, I guess there's like film level characters and then there's like TV level characters. Why not both?
Yeah. I think also, and I have to rewatch it because I've only really watched it once. In the What If trailer, doesn't it kind of look like it's Doctor Strange being bounced around to all these different multiverses? So it's kind of about him and his story. It's just animated, so it's not maybe Dr. Sherlock, but it's close.
Dr.
close
Sherlock. Right now.
Animation doesn't change the validity of the show.
Oh, absolutely not. I'm not so a little bit.
So my
preach,
brain,
girl, preach.
When this was over, my brain was like, man, now we have to wait until September because Shang-Chi is coming out. And then we have to wait again for Eternals. And then we have to wait again for Spider-Man. And then my brain went, wait, what if Shang-Chi, Hawkeye, Eternals, Miss Marvel, and Spider-Man. We get 6 more Marvel things this year.
They've been busy.
It's shocking.
You know what? It's not a problem. It's not a freaking problem. There's so much to work on. And now that they're like, we have everything. There's a multiverse and there's all these paths are crossing. There's so many comic stories that they can work on that why the hell not? Make TV series all the time. Employ everybody. I'll give you my money. Do it.
Take my money.
Absolutely. I agree.
Now, Sylvie is like a huge part of this story. Do you think that, I mean, it's self-explanatory, but do you think that this is the last time that we'll see Sylvie? And if not, when?
I couldn't tell you when, but she's definitely coming back. There's no way that she's fulfilled her glorious purpose and now she's done.
Glorious
and whatever.
Purpose. Oh my gosh. Alex, what do you think?
We're not done with her yet.
No.
There's no way. My only thought process to her not coming back would be like the actor's choice, maybe. But like you saw the way that Marvel like accommodated her when she had a baby. And like, did you see that outfit? Can we take a moment to appreciate the outfit and the costume design?
That's directed by a bisexual woman.
For anyone who doesn't know, they basically made Sylvie's costume with like, I think the breastplate or the front piece that could pop out so that she could breastfeed her child while she was filming, which is unreal and amazing and should be the norm all
that's
the time.
Called change.
Yeah.
Progressive.
Yeah, like I learned that and to me my thought was, well, if they were willing to be that accommodating for what's going on with her life, like I feel like that would be the one reason she might leave. So I think we're stuck with her.
Yeah. 100%. I also agree. I think that the crazy part too is like we've always really been able to predict to some degree like, oh, this character is probably going to get introduced and this is likely going to happen and this is maybe where the story's going to go based on comics or whatever notion people have of the world. But I think this show is where that breaks because now it could be almost literally anything. as to when we're going to see her again, it might not be for a really long time or it might be in the next thing. She might happen to just pop up randomly because she can. But I think now there's no way to predict stuff like that. We're all just going to be pointing out Mephisto everywhere all the time. We're all going to be like running in circles trying to figure out what Marvel's going to do next. And there's no chance that we're going to be able to guess. It's just, we're just along for the ride at this point.
I think what you mean to say is we're getting our tinfoil hats is what you're referring to.
Yeah. It's still in the mail.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. We have a lot of content coming up. So, of course, Multiverse of Madness. We have Far From Home. What's it called? No Way Home. We have Eternals, which I don't think is going to be related. It's going to be kind of like Black Widow. It's going to be kind of like introducing these characters who are going to have to like also pop in and like join the Avengers potentially. I don't see how they would participate in this multiversal deal that's happening. Quantumania, we have the new Black Panther movie coming in. Do you think that all of these films and TV shows are going to participate in the same kind of like Earth 616 deal that we are dealing with right now? Or do you think that it's going to be from different timelines and then we're going to have to try to figure out how they're connected or what's the deal? What do you ladies think?
If you think about the first three phases that we didn't know were three phases until like quite a ways into it, I guess. I feel like this is not just all going to be phase four. I have a feeling that this year maybe is phase four and then the stuff coming next year is a new I have no clue, but I feel like they've released, okay, these are all the things that we're working on and these are the projects that you'll be seeing in the next 2 years, 5 years at that Disney Investors thing that they did last year. But I don't think it's all happening right now or all in the same timeline, or especially now after this whole freaking blow up, they can't all be on the same timeline.
You know they've got all the way up to phase 22 planned. I mean, come
oh
on.
Yeah.
Just say
phase 22.
Honestly, would not be that surprised if they head up to phase 22 at this point.
That's too many phases.
Even that, like,
I would say at least like maybe the next generation. So like the next like season, you know?
But the idea is that like if you're going to make this huge universe and you're going to have it all planned out, I would say at a best case scenario, it makes sense for them to at least list out like characters and a way that they may want to connect or introduce them, and then it can always change. But if they don't plan ahead for it, then there's no way to like make it look intentional or make it look like that was the plan all along. If they just do it as they go, it becomes messy and complicated, and then they miss stuff and it's not consistent or canon, and then you have to just be like, well, it's fine, it's just, it doesn't make sense, but don't worry about it, we didn't plan ahead for it. So
yeah,
I would rather them plan a lot and then have to cut and not use it than be like, well, we'll do it as long as people want it. Like, yeah, they should do it as long as it makes sense and as long as they have stories to tell.
You know, I think it's actually funny you say that. I think one of my biggest, and again, this is probably another very unpopular opinion, but this is also from just conversations I've had with other people, is there's a lot of people that really have a hard time making connections, or they see a movie maybe once or twice, and then they're expected to remember all these little details like a year or two later. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like if they plan super far in advance, they might actually lose fans. Now, you have the hardcore Marvel fans. I totally respect that. And you have the people who are waiting and the comics and they're expecting things to happen. But like, after a while, there's going to be this, you know, 10-year-old kid who watched this movie and then will be 14, will still not fully understand or respect like everything going on. And then you never know, they could get frustrated and then they just, well, it wasn't that great, because they won't have that same type of respect, you know? And that's something that I remember experiencing, you know, myself before I read the comics. Like, there were so many things that I missed and I didn't like put two and two together. And even I myself would get frustrated because I'm like, wow, how am I expected to remember all this?
Yeah.
But I think there's two categories that a lot of these people fall into. And we've had so many conversations about how this franchise becomes less and less and less accessible to people as we go forward, because you have to watch everything. And now not just one or two movies a year, but TV shows that happen once a week in addition to all these movies. And then there's comics and sideshows and shorts and references and interviews and little bits and pieces that you can pick up from everything. So I think that people fall into two categories. I think they fall into the category of like us, or at least what we try to do, where we like follow along and we do our best to remember things, or we'll rewatch stuff in our spare time, or be like, oh, that movie was so great, I'll throw it on in the background while I do dishes. Like, I know that's a thing that a lot of us do because we like it so much and we know we're not going to get everything from the first watch. And then there's also people who are like, oh yeah, I saw Captain America once, and also Captain Marvel, and that other movie that one time, and I don't really understand it as a universe, but individually as a story, it was cohesive enough or simple enough for them to follow, like, very surface level, like, this is a person, they're going through something, they had a villain, that villain was defeated or not, or whatever, and they don't really have to understand the subtext as much. They can only understand what happened just in that movie, and I think that's just, they're two completely different categories of people.
Yeah,
you're not going to be able to appease both, right?
I think that's also the pull to these movies, though, is that there is the kind of, like, capsule movies. So something like Ant-Man is, like, there's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. There's, like, Iron Man, right? Like, there's a couple of them that are, like, very just one watch and you'll be fine. But I think that the allure of the Marvel Cinematic Universe is it's taking all of these years and years of comics and kind of picking and choosing the ones that they want to show you as a visualization and luring you into watching the rest of them. So I think my first Marvel movie was, like, Winter Soldier, maybe? I think I didn't watch any of the Iron Man movies. I maybe watched Captain America. I don't even remember, which is the weirdest thing to me because it's like,
so we're gonna have to go back and watch.
Oh, I've seen all of them. I've watched all of them. I watched all of them for sure like 5 years ago, and then I just did a like marathon over the summer of 2020, which was like a year ago now. But it's always good time to do it again. I watched one of them and I was like, I don't get a lot of the stuff that they were referring to. And the person that I was watching it with, I think it was my friend Cedric, he was like, yeah, because you have to watch these three movies. And I was like, oh, cool. There's more for me to watch. That's really exciting. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to kind of look at it as an event or like as a anthology, chronology, whatever. Like, it's storytelling that I don't really have to put a lot of energy into. I want to read the comics now. Like, I have comics that I want to read because I want more of the story. But I think what makes Marvel great is that it's pulling off of this source material that if you wanted to dive more into it, you could. You'd get really lost in it. Or you could watch some movies that fit in a timeline and you'll be caught up. I don't think it's that challenging. I don't think anybody's like, yeah, I've never seen a movie before in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but you know what I'm going to start with? Spider-Man. No Way Home. That's what I'm gonna start with. It's like who are these people? I want to come to their house and I want to ask them lots of questions.
There are people like that though.
Megan has a question.
They're literally me because.
Oh really?
The first Marvel movie I ever saw was Guardians of the Galaxy, and I loved it on its own.
That makes sense.
I think the next one I saw was Civil War.
Well, Guardians is another great example of a capsule movie. Like,
a standalone.
You learned a lot about him and the team, and there was a beginning, middle, and end, and great.
And I didn't need to see anything else.
Right, and you can watch the second one?
Yeah.
That's good, too.
But then I saw, again, I'm pretty sure the second one that I saw was Civil War, which went through the whole thing, and I was like, I missed a lot. Not that I missed a lot in that movie, because all of it went through my brain, but I was like, there's a lot of stuff I need to see for some of this to make sense, for most of this to make sense. But at least for me, that didn't make me not like what I watched. It was very entertaining. As standalones, I think maybe Captain America was really boring the first time I watched it. Now I love it, but I think like this Loki season would be very confusing and weird to somebody who doesn't have any taste.
Yeah. So
100%. I think, like you said, the films are probably better as standalones that are centered around a specific hero or group of heroes versus the ones that are put in there on purpose as connectors, right? Like all the Avenger movies, sort of you need to see everything else for them to make complete sense. They're still great on their own, but storytelling wise, they're thread movies, I think.
And they're turning out to be all connected, which is how we kind of like have done an entire infinity loop and just come right back to how we started. But I think that's what makes them awesome. Like, I'm the kind of person, before I started watching Marvel movies, this is such a weird thing for me to say, but I used to go to the movies with my friends, elementary school, high school. I'd come home and my parents would be like, how was the movie? And I'd be like, oh, it was awesome. I always loved every movie. Oh, it was so great. I hope they make a second one. And my parents were always like, they're not always going to make a sequel to every movie just because you like it. And I'm like, that's not fair. I really like it. So for me, this is the perfect thing for me because I'm like, wow, there's so much that we can explore and it's all connected together. And it's there. There's always going to be something next. Like, as soon as I see Shang-Chi, I'm going to be like, oh, this question that I have is going to be answered. Or this part of the movie that I really liked is probably going to happen again later on. I know nothing about the character, but I'm really excited to see like what happens next. And I genuinely think that's what Marvel's for people like me who are like, I need more. Give me more. I can take it. It's okay. what are some of your favorite Easter eggs from this series? I know Megan already mentioned one. Alex wants to go first, please, my friend.
I don't know if you can say it's an Easter egg per se.
I thought you were going to say, I don't know. Next.
Moving on. Next question. But did anybody else tear up at the opening of season six, episode six? Because there were tears for me. I got emotional. As soon as I heard Black Panther, I was like, I need a minute. I'm not ready for it. They did not prepare me for this. I need to take some time. And I loved. And then the way they just connected it all, like that was a cinematic masterpiece. Like you could tell they spent time on it and just chef's kiss. It was just fantastic. So I don't know if it's exactly an Easter egg, but I had to bring it up. I had to talk about it.
Well, you picked out the Wakanda Forever shout out. Is there an Easter egg within that that you heard that you were so happy that you heard other than Black Panther?
If I'm going to be perfectly honest, I heard Black Panther and I kind of lost my senses for a minute. Like it did, like I got very emotional. Black Panther was one of my favorite Marvel movies out of all of them. So as soon as that kind of happened, full disclosure, I was not paying attention to the rest. Yeah, I knew it was happening, but I needed to like take a minute. But you know, I kind of, again, and I could be wrong here, but I don't think their goal with all of that was for there to be one specific quote or one specific Easter egg. Could be wrong. You never know what Marvel's thinking. You never know. But I think their overall intention was as a whole, you know, all the different little pieces of Marvel as a whole going into this, you know, timeline that this entire Loki series is about. I just got really distracted as soon as I heard Black Panther and then I was gone.
That's fair. Two of my, well, I guess it's kind of one, but one of my Easter eggs was also that whole thing. I heard two quotes that I'm so happy I heard, and I kid you not, I heard them the first time and I'm shocked because one of them happens like way in the middle there. So I can't believe it hit my ear, but I think I know why. The first one that I heard was, we're going to jump on this spaceship and get out of here. You want to come?
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm just waiting. That one's in there.
Oh my gosh.
And the other one I heard happened at the end, and it did to me what Wakanda Forever did to you, Alex. It was, what is grief if not love persevering?
I knew it. Mm-hmm. So good.
Oof. You know so well, Megan.
I knew you were gonna say it.
I was gonna say both.
I went like this. The first one I didn't know, but the second one I was like, "What is grief?" I was like, "I know she's gonna do it."
100%. You say it in your head before she says.
Yeah. So I have one that's kind of an Easter egg for like something later, and then one that is just an Easter egg in general. When Miss Minutes is telling you all about like the TVA and if you go to work late, like you'll be pruned and all that stuff, when you see all the wibbly wobblies of the timelines, you can see the X-Wing in the background. The X-Men.
Wait, X-Wing.
Yeah, the X-Wing, like the X-Men.
I was wondering what that was.
It looks like the X-Wing. I'm gonna go with it.
I see it. I was wondering what that was. I'm like, that doesn't look like a shield ship.
Mm-hmm. It's couldn't got a really long nose that's kind of like, and it's got these like weird sideways. Yep, X-Wing, yep. Timeline.
Cool.
Ralph Boner's making a comeback, baby. Let's freaking go. My second Easter egg is on the license plate that Mobius is driving on. Not only does he have a hula girl like Darcy did in the truck, but his license plate reads Grinwald, GRNW1D. That's a reference to Mark Grinwald, who inspired Mobius's likeness in the comics. He's also the co-creator of Eliath.
Did anybody else think that truck looked like the Pizza Planet truck for
a little bit?
Okay. Sorry, it was actually me. My brain went. It is Lightning McQueen riding in the Pizza Planet truck. Or why?
Oh my god.
Girl, you get me. Universe. You get
what's
me.
What's his car? Ka-chow.
You with a little
with a little
and
rusties.
A little rusties. You too can look like me. Ka-chow.
That's a good one. Another one is, it's not really an Easter egg, but when He Who Remains at the end is going, amen, you know, those little, like squishy variants of himself on the desk, how they were fighting, they instead started praying. They went on their knees and they started praying, and it was so cute. I was like, this is the cutest little, like, tiny thing that you could do to make me just love this even more. And then the last one, this one is something that I thought that I heard and I was like, it's nothing. And then I watched my friends, New Rock Stars, who are not my friends. I wish they were. Oh. And they confirmed it because they actually looked back and compared the two. I swear to God I heard it, but I didn't want to be crazy. When Sylvie throws the dagger and cuts off the timekeeper's head and she goes to pick it up and it falls down the stairs, you can hear really, really faintly in the background, "See you soon." It's what He Who Remains says to her once she stabs him in the stomach.
See you soon.
See you soon.
He says, "See you soon."
Yep. He says, "See you soon," and so does this like ethereal voice in the background. It's like a whisper Weird. Voice. I'm gonna see if I can find it.
Ew.
It's gross, Whoa. Right?
Whoa.
Right? Let me find
it. I'm gonna need a minute. I mean, let's be real. I feel like the entire void is just one giant freaking Easter egg.
Oh, 100%.
That entire void was just, all right, let's see how much Marvel we can throw into one area and let's see what sticks. Copter.
Did anybody see Frog and Thor? Villain.
Yes.
Yeah. That was probably my favorite Easter egg. He's just in Frog Thor. Jar.
Help.
And how long has he been in there?
He wants to know here.
Is anyone going to help him? It's just that entire thing. You know that's what they did. Is let's throw the spaghetti on the wall. Let's see what sticks and let's see what people notice. And people will get their tinfoil hats on again. Like, I know I saw one related to Thanos' copter. Where it's like, was Thanos even supposed to snap his finger? Or was that a whole Nexus event? And like, I'm reading all of this stuff and you're kind of like, this was totally what they were planning on. This is what they wanted. They just wanted people to come up and it generated discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But it was 100%. Fantastic. I rewinded that section of the show so many times and I was replaying it, just standing there, like staring at like a blade of grass.
Everything.
So like something could be there's in that shield, grass.
A shield yeah. ship in the background. There's the Ant-Man's nemesis in the first movie. His giant helmet.
Yep.
Also, how much of a scene stealer was Jonathan Majors in this series? Amazing. I'm so impressed with his ability. He's so convincing, so entertaining to watch. I loved it.
I have to say, like I said, when I, you know, this was not my favorite show from the Marvel series. There weren't a lot of parts that really captured my attention, yet that every scene that he was in, I was just loving it. Like it made me pretty much forget like all the other stuff that happened, and I'm like, I just want to hear this man talk. Like, just keep going, right? And I don't know, when Sylvie killed him, I was like, well, I don't want him to be I'm not done with him yet. And then I remembered nobody is.
Yeah.
But just everything about him was so amazing. I was so impressed with his acting. Not how I actually pictured Kang, to be honest.
No.
Like, at all, in any way, shape, or form. But I like the direction. I really, really do.
Okay. Hold on. I didn't know. The whole world was up and about that it was going to be Kang the Conqueror, and that was going to be the big bad, the same way Mephisto was supposed to be the big bad from WandaVision. So I didn't want to, like, get my hopes up. But a lot of people were like, oh, Kang the Conqueror is a very similar villain to Thanos. Like, they're very similar in the role they would fit. Again, I haven't read the comics, but just in the role that they were
the best for everybody kind of thing. What they think is the best.
Yeah, so it's a similar narrative to Thanos. Obviously, they're different people. But I think a lot of people thought he was going to be portrayed kind of similarly, and then he was so, like, funny and charismatic, and yeah, I just wanted to hear him keep talking. And what was with the apple that he was eating the whole time? I was just confused and happy, and all of it was good. And I think that especially when you get to a point where everybody's guessing the end, and they all feel like collectively we know what's going to happen, and then something surprises you like that, like someone's performance being so good and so out of what you expected, that's kind of what I love about this show and that last episode.
Only because you bring it up, I do have a theory about the apple.
Okay.
Hit me.
I need to know.
Adam and Eve.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's why it was. And I'm not going to lie, did not pick it up right away. And it took me some time. But I'm like, what apple significance possibly is there? And then it clicked. And I fully think that was the intention.
That's valid. It was like a lot of symbolism that he just threw in there. But he just like ate it at random times. He was like fully explaining his story, and he's like, hold on.
I need to take this.
I gotta eat.
And then I'm gonna tell you the rest of it.
I think it makes it a little bit genuine and a little bit real that like he was just like eating, like
he was hungry.
I don't know if it's just you, but when I see people eating in TV, I'm like, how many times did they have to take that, like do the cuts and like not eat and just pretend to like drink from a spoon or whatever, like.
Or is that a real apple that he's eating? What is the actor eating?
Time.
Eating time. He's eating the constant time.
I meant more like, is he eating like a candy that has like extra crunch to it? I don't know. Just, you know, I meant like in real life. I wasn't
thinking
like. No, that's an apple.
Yeah.
That's an apple.
That's an apple. That is an apple.
What can I say? My imagination goes a little up there.
Alyssa kind of thought it was an onion because of the lighting when he first came.
I said, is that an onion? She's like, no, babe, it's an apple. I said,
they do have
layers.
Yeah,
that makes more sense. That does make more sense.
They do have layers, like the multiverse.
Oh, I mean, now, speaking of layers of the multiverse, I would really like to know, in what ways do you think that this will affect the MCU? So we know Doctor Strange is happening and Multiverse of Madness. It's supposed to be a horror movie also, so a little bit nervous about that, but also kind of excited because what better horror movie than to watch a Marvel movie? How do you think this will affect the rest of the MCU, and how will our heroes deal with the downfall?
Doctor Strange is going to lose his shit.
I don't think he's going to resolve
it. Pardon my French.
I think he's just going to probably like time jump and like evaluate and maybe like run into some trouble and try to resolve, like put out little fires all over the place. But I don't think there's any way that just one person.
I don't even know if you could say that he'd put out little fires. I feel like it's literally just going to be, he's going to come in. He's going to, like you said, evaluate, but this is going to be like end game level, like war, you know, they're setting up all of these extra young Avenger characters, and you know, this is going to be, everyone's going to have to get involved to really solve this problem. Doctor Strange is just going to sit there and be like, all right, here's what you guys got to do. Sort of similar to when he was looking around in all the different multiverses for what was the one. He's literally going to just be like, all right, this is what you guys got to do. Go for it. I'm going to sit here. You go ahead. You got this. That's how I envision it, right? Because, I mean, is he going to fight? Sure. But at the end of the day, I don't think he's going to take on this, I'm going to be the one to save the multiverse. But I think everyone seems to have that, I don't know, impression. but I could be wrong.
He also has the ability to like look through time and space a little bit, right? So he can also see like it's not his job or his place to affect change or to do all these things. They have to kind of play out as they are, and whatever will be like Loki and Sylvie go the whole show being like, this was my choice and I got pulled from a Nexus event and then I escaped and I did these things, and they were like, that's the facade or the impression that you have free will when everything has been written and will happen a particular way, and we can see into the future for that as well. Like Doctor Strange was like, oh, I know there's only one way that we win against Thanos, and it felt like this weird roundabout way to do it, but that was like the only way that made sense in the whatever number of universes that he looked at, right? So I think it's the same thing. He's gonna exist, but I don't think he's gonna take like the responsibility of fixing things into his own hands, I would hope.
Or he may actually enlist the help of some people, like this one,
the Scarlet Witch, like this
one? And also
Miles Morales.
No, sorry. I don't have a Loki pop. But I feel like it, as seen in comics, the three of them with their wiggly woos.
We love a good wiggly woo.
We do.
Now, like, one thing that I saw online, just because I'm obsessed with Marvel lore, is the moment that He Who Remains stops feeling and understanding like what's going on around him. A lot of people think that's the same moment that Wanda becomes the Scarlet Witch, because she's a Nexus being. So she's only existed as of that moment. What do you guys think about that? Like, do you think that Wanda is also going to be participating in this and using her power for fixing what's going on? Her children screamed out to her and said, help us, like, mom, come find us. Where are they? Are they hidden somewhere, or are they a different variety in a different multiverse?
This could just be because I kind of hope it, because I like this type of character for Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. I do kind of hope he takes on the character of, you know, the one who is sort of the voice of reason and realistic. Like, he would be the one to say to Scarlet Witch, you can't find your kids, and this is why. So, and I know it's terrible because everyone wants her to find her kids and everybody wants this, but you also have to kind of look at it like, you know, everything can't work out perfectly for everybody. And I feel like Doctor Strange would be that person to say, like, it has to be a certain way for things to flow.
There's no chance they introduce her kids, though, and then they're not going to bring them back. That they would just, like, blip out of existence.
I mean, I never said Wanda would listen to him. Do you really think that she would listen to Dr. Strange? No. But that doesn't mean he's going to try to not convince her.
Okay.
And who knows, right? Again, nobody ever knows what Marvel thinks. But, I don't know, I always had that feeling of Dr. Strange as that voice of reason. And he knows what the right thing to do is, but whether or not people choose to listen, I don't know. She does her own. She created a freaking Nexus event on her own. I'm just saying, like, it's really
hard
to tell.
She is a Nexus event.
Exactly. Like, she can do whatever she wants at this point, but, you know, it just sort of makes you wonder what type of dynamic does that create? Everyone sort of has that understanding that Wanda and Doctor Strange are going to work together. Is that the case? We don't know. And I'd actually kind of would enjoy seeing it that maybe they don't directly work together, because call me crazy, but I like conflict of that kind of stuff.
Maybe they're going to share a really awkward kiss at the end. That's
You know what? They might. They might. Please don't. Marvel, don't do that.
No, they don't.
Cancel the whole MCU if that happens.
I think Adam will grow superpowers and fight her.
I'm a little bit confused, though, by the fact that time is written by He Who Remains. It's kept in this one timeline, and he prunes, he employs the TVA to prune everybody. How does Doctor Strange use the time stone to go backwards and forwards in time if time is constant? I think it's a rhetorical question, but it's like,
I think that, like, the notion that if it didn't affect what he was trying to do. So he was like, I'm trying to keep out the other variants of me. So anything that like goes against that or at some point could branch off and create a timeline that leaves an open or vulnerable space for another variant to come in and try to take over this line. He's like, I just want it to be a closed circle where everything is good and nice. But there's probably people who are like, if I had a sandwich today or a pizza today, that's not going to affect the timeline or yeah. your timeline at the very least. So there's, I'm sure people who are like, whether Thanos snapped people or didn't, that doesn't affect the TVA because the TVA's only job is to make sure that other variants of Kang don't come and try to conquer this timeline.
Yeah.
So Thanos, that wouldn't be a priority for him. So it wasn't maybe a thing that was or wasn't supposed to happen. That's just my like understanding of what the TVA was for. Right.
Sure.
Am I wrong? I don't know.
It's hard though, because there's so many varieties of the TVA now. Like what we saw at the end of Loki was the timekeeper was just Kang in his Kang outfit, being all Kang, you know? So I'm a little bit confused. I mean, I'm sure they're going to answer a lot of questions because I don't think they'll leave a lot of unanswered questions if it's this complicated. I think they'll be very like, this is why this is. This is why this makes sense. We're going to give you a lot of different scenarios and make it kind of all flow together. But I think if it's too confusing, then people aren't going to want to watch it anymore.
I completely agree with that because there are parts of this show that really didn't make sense to me at all. And I think it's like part of the reason. Well, it's, I don't know if I'm just not intellectual, but a lot of who we are calling Kang, I didn't know who that was. So you guys all saying like Kang the Conqueror, I was like, oh, is that his name? I literally have been like, isn't he who remains? Anyway, this is how much I don't know about the comic books and all that other world. But a lot of it felt very convoluted and repetitive. And that's the part of the writing that I didn't really get or follow very well. I will say a second time through, stuff started to make more sense. And which is why I said earlier, I think this is a show that you need to watch multiple times to really have it sink in. There was a part in particular, and now I can't think of it. I thought I wrote it down, where, again, with the writing, stuff sort of like goes back on itself where something was said in, I remember what it is. They used the pronoun he a lot when they were referring to the variant before we found out it was Sylvie that they were chasing. But they knew that she escaped when she was a kid. So wouldn't they have tried to keep track of a rogue Loki that they couldn't figure out who? Wouldn't you know kind of that
more
it's
for
gonna
us
be her?
Than anything?
I guess, but it just was something that like felt, okay, well, that was a loose thread that you didn't look at. Again, it's me just being very judgmental.
That makes a lot of sense. Writing,
but no, it was like it. Come on.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as a convoluted, repetitive thing in that whole last scene when He Who Remains is describing everything that happens that I didn't really get, she just keeps saying, you're a liar. You're lying.
Oh my
you're
God.
A liar. And I was like, we get it. You think he's a liar.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She made me so mad in that last episode. I literally turned to Joe and I was like, she's being annoying.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm like, she's not listening.
My rationale for that was that she literally is just a small child in an adult's body because she grew up by herself. She's like, I don't have any friends. I don't know anybody. I've literally just been plotting my like 10-year-old revenge to kill the people that hurt me because that's all that I can do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know any better or any different. And why would I trust anybody? Because the only people that I've known have betrayed me, right? Mm-hmm. But just going back to what you were saying about the pronouns that they used for Loki, I think that if they had done a better job at actually being true to his gender fluidity, they could have said like they instead of, and that would have been so easy to just do that instead of assuming that like, oh my God, like it's a woman. How outrageous. Like Loki is canonically gender fluid and is both male and female or neither or whatever at any particular time. He's a Norse god. He's not a human being. He can do whatever he wants. And it would have been so easy for them to just be like Loki or they or something that is not gender specific. And then it wouldn't have been stupid or whatever for them to be like, oh, it's a woman, even though we knew that. And yeah. Also, when we found Loki, it could have been either or, and it would have still been the same character. Like,
yeah,
it just, it blows my mind how much I was thinking. I was also trying to like defend it a little bit, even though I'm like, I take it back. I don't want to. But I was like, oh, maybe the MCU version, they were going to like not have that Loki be gender fluid or whatever. I read like an interview that they did with the writer, and they were like, I know that it's so important to people who relate to the fact that Loki is gender fluid and they relate to the character and they want that to be a part of it. And I know how important that is. And we made sure that that was a priority for us to make sure his character was gender fluid. And I was like, what did you do to make his character gender fluid? You literally put it on a piece of paper in the end credits that said sex fluid. And that was the extent of it. They never did anything at all to push that narrative in any way, shape, or form. Yeah.
Except for the very quick 5-minute scene in episode 3.
Oh my God. When he said, do you date men or women? Well, and he said, a bit of both.
That's him saying and he's that bisexual. Was it. Or yes. Like, if we're gonna say that, and again, like, a lot of people could have taken that any particular way because we know people like to misinterpret things. He didn't demonstrate that at all. And I know you don't have to, he didn't have to date both genders or whatever, but I was like, they could have like had him flirt with a male guard or had him do literally anything at all to demonstrate that he was bisexual and or gender fluid. He could have shape-shifted into a woman version of himself. Like, there was so many options for him to do that, and people get really excited when you start to introduce characters that are supposed to fit this narrative because that sort of thing isn't represented in such a big franchise like Marvel.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for being like ranty here, but I also think like the twins in Scarlet Witch, I forget which one is which, but one of them is gay.
I think Billy's the one that's like, oh no. Yeah.
See, you
Wiccan.
Don't know either.
Wiccan. It's Wiccan.
I never know which one is which.
Billy is Wiccan. Billy is canonically gay.
Those are the same people. Okay. So yeah, Billy is gay. And I swear to God, if they introduce those characters again and they don't reference it at all, I'm going to burn Marvel Studios to the ground.
This is not a threat. This is not a threat. Just for...
No one's going to come for me. Also, I live in Canada. So it drives me nuts a little bit that they keep hinting that they're going to introduce these things and be true to their characters and canonically they are that way in the comics and they just ignore it because whatever fear they have of upsetting people or distancing themselves from whatever group of people they think they don't want to distance themselves from, I'm waiting for them to lean into that and be like, this is a really important part of this person's character that we completely ignored and I need that to actually exist now for me to be able to be like, yep, 100%. Like, that would have been the thing that made Loki, like, instead of like poor writing or that wasn't my favorite or like whatever, it would have made it phenomenally better if they had done that instead. That's just my take. Yeah. That's my hot take.
Hot take. I don't know if they completely ignored it because they did obviously. I know it's not as noticeable. It's not enough. It's not nearly enough. But they wrote it in the credits and he said that one line. It is Disney's way of, and I'm not defending them in any way because I completely agree with you, but it's Disney's way of going, we're slowly working on
but
not
that was
being
like a toe in the ocean.
I know, but that's Disney. That's the way that they go about things because they are such a massive company that they can't just like dive right in and see what happens.
But I think they could though, because like a lot of people are like, oh, they're gonna, you know, like Deadpool's gonna exist and are they going to like PG it down, and they didn't, and they're like, oh well,
yeah, but
you know,
we haven't seen like a Disney Deadpool movie yet.
I know, but like, you know, that character is at some point gonna join the MCU at some point because he has crossed paths with like the mutant community and things like that. At some point, they'll have to just have everybody join everybody.
Yeah.
But I just think, like,
I don't know if curse words are what Disney's boundary is, though. I think it's, like, societal things that they have to be careful with because they don't want to do it wrong. That's why they're doing it so slowly and so carefully.
I think we're past the point of, like, that being, like, a thing that we have to be concerned about. Like, there's characters in the comic, and they act and have a particular way, and they have phrases or actions or things that they do, and if they're basing the rest of his character on that comic, they can easily add that part into it. It doesn't need to be a scary thing.
And we have a season 2 coming, so cross your fingers. You never know.
I think, a second chance.
Yeah. I think that the only thing that just bothered me, like, I see both sides because I'm like, I don't think it was enough at all. Like, absolutely not. I also understand that it's Disney, so, like, they put it in, like, these weird places so that if they showed it in China, they could, like, cut it out. Because the world sucks, let's just be honest. The thing that just bothered me the most was something actually that Joe said that just really infuriated me is when all the Lokis are hanging out in the bowling alley, they're like, yeah, she's a female variant of us. And they're all like, that sounds terrifying. And there's a crocodile on the ground or an alligator on the ground. And as a character, Loki is gender fluid. So you obviously are like characters that lean into your feminine side. I know they're variants, so maybe not all of them are gender fluid, but like, the thought of a woman being a Loki was horrifying, but there's an alligator in a pool drinking wine on the ground. That's the one that just like drove me nuts. But I mean, if Disney is making progress, then I want to see more progress. That's all. I want to see, like Joe said, Wiccan as a gay man who is, I think in the comics, he's married to like a Hulk variety. I don't know which Hulk he's married to. So one of the Hulks, you know, the Hulk family. Yeah, I don't know of a lot of queer Marvel characters. So I think it would be great to kind of like bring out who is there and represent a large majority of the world. I don't think I have any more questions.
Oh, go Alex, go.
Alex.
I hate to circle back to this, but you did make the comment about how Sylvie was super annoying because she kept being like, you're a liar. I actually have to say this was a very relatable moment because I don't know about you guys, but when you're trying to convince yourself of something, you repeat it over and over and over again. So I had to point out, like, for me, I actually found that part like very relatable in the sense that I didn't look at it as she's just being stubborn. I felt like it was actually her trying to convince herself. Like, she believed it. She believed all of it. But she had to consistently remind herself that she can't let herself believe everything that King is saying. And at first I was like, you know what? Yeah, this is okay. This is ridiculous. Like, we heard you the first time. But then the more, like, you kind of hear it, I started picking up. I was like, oh, my God, I just did that yesterday at work when I was trying to convince my, you know what I mean? Like, I started to, like, it almost added a human side to the character. Like, you know, a much more relatable side. I just had to kind of get that point across because I actually feel like that was one of the most relatable scenes out of the entire show for me was just, I was like, yeah, I do that too. Like, and it's, oh, that's okay to do that. Like, you know, mind you, I might not say it out loud where everybody can hear it, but I'm sure we all probably have those types of moments.
I appreciate that. That's a really good way of looking at it.
I think one of the things I wanted to touch on as well, just to really rip this show apart some more.
Let's do it. That's what this show's for.
I'm not trying to like say it sucked because I did really like it. And again, I think it's just from the perspective that I was watching it. There was a lot of fight sequences, as there are in pretty much everything that Marvel does. But this one felt weirdly different and very choreographed. It all felt like, okay, one, two, punch, hit, turn. And I noticed it the most in episode 3 in that one shot where they're on Lamentis and they're trying to get to this ship that's going to leave the planet and they'll be saved. And they're running through all of these moments. And as somebody who doesn't work directly in film, but I have a lot of friends and close people to me that work in the industry, it shouldn't be noticeable when it's a one shot. It should just be shockingly amazing. And I knew it was a one shot after like 5 seconds when it was a panning moment and they were turning around the characters and you could see Tom Hiddleston was better at it. And I think that's probably just because he's more well-versed in the Marvel, you know, film sets. But you could see in Sofia DiMartino, is that how you say her name?
I'm so bad with like
Sofia DiMartino.
DiMartino. Some of her movements felt very like blocky and like you could almost see the counting happening in her head, which is totally understandable because that is something crazy to be a part of with all the moving pieces that go into the special effects that would be happening and the like practical effects that would be happening of stuff blowing up and throwing across them and all the extras running around. But in content like Marvel, it shouldn't be noticeable. And it was to someone who isn't in that industry. And I could be one person that noticed it.
I was going to say, I actually think you're 100% correct. I think that was why I liked He Who Remains the most. All of his scenes felt almost like they were improvised and he was so into it. And it like it didn't feel like he was literally counting the moments or, you know, being directed. It felt like the directors that are really were like, here are your lines, do what you want. Whereas throughout the rest of it, you know, even the moment where Loki is talking to the kid variant of himself and he's like, what was your Nexus event? And the way he just said, like, I killed Thor, you're like, that was very anticlimactic. Like, why? Like, please give me more. You know what I mean? Like, it was so rehearsed and counted, and I 100% agree. And now that we're talking it out, I think that's actually why I enjoyed Kang's scenes the most, was it felt so organic, where the rest of it was just like, eh.
Yeah, it's another reason why I liked, I liked the first two episodes the best out of all of them, because I felt like Owen Wilson now he deserves so much more credit than he's been given by some people, because he is so good. And every scene that had himself and Tom Hiddleston together was awesome. Like, the two of them felt like they were fighting at first and then that they were really best friends by the end of it. And that connection that was made was my favorite. And I think that's also why at the very end, when Mobius doesn't know who Loki is and he says, what is your name? That felt more heartbreaking than the push through the wall by Sylvie, because I felt that connection more than the two Loki's connection, which makes sense because she obviously didn't actually care about him at all.
I gotta ask, how evil do you think these guys are?
The Kangs? Like
the new timeline, Kang was saying there's different levels of evil Kang. What level do you guys think these guys are at? Because I can't stop thinking. I'm like, are these guys like the worst of the worst? Or are they like the people who are just standing in the back, just observing and watching and hoping to God nobody finds them? Like, I can't stop thinking about that. And I'd love to know what you guys think.
I think we got a bad one because he's all by himself in that statue. He's obviously the most narcissistic of them all, and he's not hiding who he is, where this first Kang that we had in this first season obviously was trying to hide who he was because he was using the TVA as a cover and the timekeepers as a cover, because nobody knew who he was except for Sylvie and Loki when they found him. Even Ravonna had no idea what was happening, and Miss Minutes like brings back, here's your files that you wanted, and she's like, this isn't what I asked for, and she's like, toodaloo, like she obviously had no idea what was going on either. So yeah, I think we got a bad one.
I was so thrown off by the fact that Loki was running around and nobody cared, and that makes me wonder, like, if they were as narcissistic or as evil as they think, like, they would take all threats seriously. So it's like, you don't belong here. Whereas if they are, you know, not as much of a threat, in the sense of they're worried more about the outside other defenses than some guy running around.
Or
I don't know.
Maybe he's so evil that he doesn't want to have control of the timeline. He wants it to be out of control.
You're absolutely right. That's very possible too. I'm very excited.
Lots of hot takes today, man. Sheesh.
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 Also, can I just say the fact that Ravonna looked at those three Chuck E. Cheese looking weird mechanic things and didn't question that those are not alive and they look super sketchy
every time she went in there.
It's just, I took one look at those guys and I was like, what on earth am I looking at? And then she like knocked the head off and she's like, oh my god, it's fake. I'm like, yeah, it's fake. Look at them. They're like, hello.
Like, well, that's where, like,
guys, you got to watch us live if you want to see the real pantomimes that Joe does.
But that's where I wonder where she's coming from, because she kept saying in the first couple of episodes, like, the timekeepers are really on this. Like, we need to figure out who this variant is because they're upset. How? What? They're animatronic.
Yeah.
How are they portraying this annoyance and this anger towards you? And very interested.
It's a very complicated feeling that she's going through. I don't know. I don't even know.
Maybe she's in the same mindset as Sylvia is, that she just needs to believe so hard. So she's forcing it.
I mean, Ramona's a teacher. You got to hope that she's like a little smart.
Well, one of her is a teacher.
Somebody.
That's true.
I don't know. Maybe not this one.
That was also a moment where I kind of wanted it to be Hunter B-15's variant. I didn't know it was going to be Ravonna, which was cool. Yeah, I thought it was going to be Hunter B-15.
I wanted it to be Mobius so bad. I wanted him to live a life where he was a teacher and he lived next to a beach and he rode on a jet ski. And that was
it's like when you believe. Never mind. That's for another time. Oh, guys. Oh, did you feel that? Wow. Now that we've crossed the threshold, we should remind you guys to send us your thoughts on the show at hellovideodames@gmail.com. You can also follow us at hellovideodames on Instagram and Twitter. Or, you know, you could watch us record our show live periodically on twitch.tv/itsagirlalyssa. I promise your messages will not be left in the void. We love connecting with you guys so much. And we can't wait to see what's to come in the Marvel Universe. So make sure to follow us to keep up with what's going on with us
and our variants.
See you soon.